Hi, welcome back, everybody. We're into another panel, which I'll be moderating. This one is a little different. We're going to be talking about a different aspect of careers that people go into after physics that aren't physics. We have with us Amir Faizpour from the Royal Bank of Canada, and Renee Stock from Scotiabank. And I just said bank twice, so this is very much finance and data, and the different aspects of how physicists can get involved in that. So I suppose we should start off just by each of you telling us your story, how you left physics, how you feel about that, what happened next. Amir, let's...
All right. I did my undergrad and master's in physics back in Iran. That's where I'm from. And then came to Canada in 2008 to do a PhD in physics again at University of Toronto. My research was on experimental quantum optics and quantum computing. And then after my PhD, I went out to England to Oxford to do a postdoc in the same field. And about halfway through my postdoc, and right after I wrote my first serious grant application, I decided that there was no way I wanted to keep doing that. So, and also I decided that I wasn't a huge fan of teaching, so I started looking for alternatives. I looked into, at a time in the UK, there was a lot of funding and work going on getting quantum science into quantum technology. So I explored for a while to start a quantum tech startup. But then I decided that there wasn't enough market for it at the time. So in parallel, I got very interested in machine learning and data science, and I started looking into that and teaching myself machine learning and Python, because like a lot of good academics, my language of choice was MATLAB, which is not that useful in industry. So I had to teach myself Python, and I had to learn machine learning. So about probably less than a year, I taught myself these things while I was finishing up my postdoc. And then I came back to Canada and started looking for jobs here, and I ended up at RBC as a data scientist. So I worked there as a data scientist for about a year, and since about 5 months ago, I'm leading a small team within the data science team.
Fantastic. Did the transition out of physics, how did that feel for you? Did it leave you with any regrets? What was the take?
regrets. No, it felt natural. At some point, I knew it was a very difficult decision. It took me several months to actually come to the piece that I really loved quantum physics. I had a chance to do my grad school in something else, but I chose to do it in quantum because I just loved it, and it was very difficult to give that up and go do something else. But two things helped. One was I absolutely fell in love with machine learning and deep learning and the progress they're making there. It's absolutely amazing. And at the same time, I also thought about what is it really that I enjoy doing? It obviously is largely the subject matter, which was quantum and physics, but also it is the problem-solving aspect of it, because if I wanted to be honest with myself, I was working in a lab, I was doing experiments, and 95% of the time I was debugging devices. I wasn't doing physics. I was writing code, I was debugging, I was fighting with devices. Maybe 5 to 10% of the time I was actually doing physics, and I was enjoying it. So I realized that it is really the problem solving aspect of what I was doing that was very attractive to me. And I still think that in a lot of cases, I guess one of the panelists was talking about the human aspect of their job right now. Even like that sort of thing, I usually map those into, okay, this is a problem, I formulated it like this, how can I solve this problem now? So if you try to step back and think about a lot of problems with that point of view, there are a lot of interesting problems to solve in this world.
Great. Renee, same question. Give us your start.
Well, probably not that different. A lot of physicists kind of ended up in a similar trajectory. I certainly was pretty much set on physics, pretty much from high school on. I came from Germany originally, and there, the last 2 years of high school, you actually choose your subject. I chose math and physics, and I went into physics more because it was more challenging. So physics was just really, I was really set on it. Did my undergraduate back in Germany and then went to New Mexico as part of an exchange program. Did a master in experimental optics and then completely shifted gear a little bit there already, moving into quantum information and quantum computing. Now that was around 2000 when quantum information was just getting interesting. There were just the kind of first research, a lot of foundational questions coming up. It was a really exciting time to get into quantum information. Not that it's not exciting now, but at the time it was just really much more foundational and really a lot of open questions. So I switched into theory, did my PhD in theory, then after that went to do postdoctoral research, went to the IQC, to the Institute for Quantum Computing in Calgary, and then University of Toronto. Both basically, so two postdocs basically back to back. Of course, with the academic situation and basically kind of trying to actually locate basically within like the Toronto area because I really, really enjoyed the area, it was kind of difficult to find something. So I needed to find something different that I enjoy and that I could get passionate about, because finding a faculty position in the end, it is a very long call. Like moving out to Saskatoon or Saskatchewan for a faculty position wasn't quite something that we were wanting to do. So having to find something different really took a long time. So I really struggled a long time to find something that I could get interested in. So sometime in the middle of the second postdoc, I just applied for a position that said physicists wanted. It was a risk management position. It was actually targeted at physicists. And I replied, I went for the interview. I had about 1 week to prepare, finance, get some background, do a bit of research on the people that were interviewing me. And I certainly was interesting in terms of the interview. The people were really great. Basically, both had, like, pretty much all of the people had a physics or math background that I met. So really from a kind of an environment perspective, it kind of calmed my concerns. I was very concerned about moving into a corporate environment and really moving into that area. On the other hand, though, I wasn't really quite convinced myself, and that came out in the interview, so I didn't get the position. That was in 2008. From 2008, of course, that was in the middle of 2008, so just a few months later, the financial crisis hit, which made the situation for academia even worse. There was no faculty hiring pretty much throughout 2008, 2009, no funding, pretty much most of the endowments were down. But from a finance perspective, the interesting thing for me, that's what made finance interesting. There was a crisis. I wanted to understand what led to the crisis, what went wrong. First of all, it was caused by physicists primarily anyway, like all kinds of destructive things. Maybe that's data science today. But the challenge is really like physicists have caused a lot of the financial crisis. So I really was interested in what kind of can be done about that and understanding it, what caused it, what went wrong, and also seeing actually what kind of regulations come up. I kind of stayed in touch with the people at Scotia that interviewed me, and I actually did get a position a year later, despite all the hiring freezes. They created a position for me because by then I was excited about finance. And I got lucky actually throughout the last couple of years. I was particularly interested, as I said, in kind of regulations, the financial crisis. And about 2 years in, the person that I was working with closely actually created a position for methodology and research at Scotia at the time. to basically look at regulatory changes, educate the bank on regulatory changes, influence regulatory changes, work with all of the other Canadian banks and all the other banks to kind of provide feedback on regulatory changes. And so I was able to kind of, I kind of got lucky because I was interested in it. Somebody created the position for me. So it's been kind of like very surprising in that sense from a kind of a support perspective, and of course enjoyed working with all of the people that I've met since then. Since then I've been moving in a bit of a different direction. I've done a lot of like regulatory interactions, but also basically working on a couple of projects for the bank in terms of modeling approaches, a lot of like, in the last few years, a lot of like kind of data and architectural and IT related projects. And right now running a team of about 10 quants, pretty much very similar background, all the way going basically from computer science to math, physics, and very varying backgrounds, also some economics and finance.
Cool.
And I guess one thing I forgot is during the first 3 years when I switched into finance, I decided just for the full experience, and because I didn't have a full blade when I started up in finance, I did an MBA on the side, which, looking back, is actually something that I did it just kind of gave me a counteract to all of the finance side. I just got to meet a lot of interesting people through the MBA. A lot of people that were particularly interested in startup companies, several PhDs actually I met in the MBA program that were interested in kind of finding a new path, finding a different direction. So really enjoy the today actually in terms of actually seeing all the variety of kind of directions that everybody can move into. And so it's been really a great, I think it's really amazing to basically see all of the different trajectories people have taken. So that's really amazing today.
Cool, thank you. It's interesting stuff. I really like the winding paths that you've both taken. I know that for me, one of the reasons when I kind of vaguely thought about going into finance when I was moving out of physics, and I was very concerned that they weren't going to let me wear my pajamas to work. So, which in physics you get quite used to people letting you do things like that. I was wondering if you felt any sort of cultural changes from coming out of physics and moving into a kind of more finance type world, and how that felt for you.
So, culturally, yes, it is different. There's definitely a lot more politics going on. However, it is not as bad as you might imagine. One of the big things about banks these days, or financial institutes in general, is that they have a very serious competition from Amazons and Alibabas of this world. So what they're trying hard to do is to transform themselves into tech companies that happen to be doing finance. Therefore, they're doing a lot of work to create an environment that tech talent gets absorbed and attracted to. For example, I go to work like this. We can't go in shorts, unfortunately, but we don't really have any dress code. You can wear whatever you want. You can show up to work anytime you want, as long as you deliver. Nobody is really tracking what you're doing. You can work from home if you have to. It is in some sense very similar to how I used to do my work in academia. As long as I make it to my meetings, as long as I deliver stuff that I have to, nobody is really micromanaging me. Nobody is caring that I fit into the exact rules that they set. So from that sense, it is very similar. And as I said, like the motivation there is really try to create this environment that is like very techy, startup-y sort of environment. We have a lot of innovation labs within RBC that they like literally try to build Google-like environments, like lots of beanbags and like nice lightings and colorful chairs and quiet places that you can like brainstorm and work. We have, for example, Borealis, which is the deep learning research arm of RBC, And they're housed within Mars Innovation Center, which is like a full of startups. So they're completely going for that sort of mentality in order to attract talent that actually wants to come in and do, like in Borealis, people are doing like literally academic research on deep learning with no apparent relationship to the rest of the organization. And even in other parts of technology and operations in the enterprise, they're trying very hard to be very flexible, very cool, to bring in people and actually keep them.
Great. Has your experience been similar or?
Well, I kind of started a bit earlier in finance, so a lot of the kind of like the tech aspects has been more a recent change. Certainly like these banks are certainly changing in terms of that side. And also you kind of reflect that actually at the kind of the who's actually leading the charges within most of the banks. Like for example, the chief technology officer that we have is actually, he basically started Algorithmics, which was a startup company, started out from like one or two people 20, 30 years ago. Same thing basically on the risk side where I work, the person is actually the chief risk officer is a physicist. And both are very, very active, very much actively changing kind of the environments. So that's from kind of like tying into what you're saying is that there's a lot of like change going on at the banks right now. That said, like even going back many years ago, I kind of was always worried about kind of very much the corporate atmosphere and also that it can be very kind of like very aggressive and very kind of like very rough in terms of that, in terms of working in a finance environment. What I actually found was a bit more the opposite actually. There was really a lot of collaboration with the different teams within that you had to work with. So there's a lot of collaboration across that. There's also even collaboration across other banks. As I said earlier, there was you're kind of trying to provide, for example, feedback around financial regulations. You actually get to work with the other banks, and you get to work with actually other physicists at other banks. But it's still a very, very collaborative environment from that perspective, and you're kind of working to the same goal. And in a sense, basically, actually, the people that have the most success and had the most success in our teams over the last couple of years are kind of like Bridget mentioned in the previous session, are the people actually that go out, ask questions, get to meet this team, get to meet this team, get to talk to that person, get to learn from this person. So it's very much more like a collaborative, and it's a very collaborative environment trying to solve the problem that you have to solve. You don't claim credit for it, or there's not as much credit claiming also, so much pressure. In academia, that's much tighter actually, I find.
Okay. Interesting. It's nice to hear that they're, because I think that there's a very competitive prejudice about what working in banking might feel like, and it's nice to hear that that is just a prejudice, I suppose.
Well, if you go to the trade floor, there's certainly, it's going to be a different, and I interact with the trade floor basically on a day-to-day basis, and I know a lot of like also like physicists and quants have made it there. It is a different pace there, and we interact with them daily. Still, even interacting with the trade floor, it's about collaboration and solving the problems. Mm-hmm. And so it is certainly more of that, but it's, this is Canada still, after all.
I'm wondering, Renee, you did a PhD and then went on to do an MBA. Have you ever had moments where you thought, well, I wish I'd just done the MBA, stuffed the PhD and gotten into this sooner? Or do you feel like you moved at the right time?
Well, I did the PhD because I enjoy physics.
Yeah.
And you do your PhD because you enjoy what you're doing. I picked up a lot of skill sets, of course, during physics that are helpful. I probably would have, though, chosen to do the MBA a bit earlier. Like, in the sense, basically, I was doing postdoc years, and in a sense, a lot of the knowledge that I had from the MBA, like, in terms of management, I'm now running a team of 10 people that, as you said, like, the management skills, like, we're not, basically, coding, solving problems doesn't really give you the management skills to actually run a team of 10 people. So that's where the MBA helped. Interacting with different people, in getting different perspectives, getting a bit of a perspective what the business environment is about. Frankly, I think even from an academic, even if you're thinking about an academic direction, if you're taking on a professorship position, a lot of the work is going to be how to sell your research, how to communicate, how to run a team, how to manage time, how to manage your resources, and kind of getting people motivated to do things and getting them excited. So it's not that different. So a lot of the skills that you get from an MBA actually were transferable. I kind of always look, I was actually looking down upon the MBA quite a bit, like most people quite do that I know in physics. But in the end, it actually ended up a much better experience than I ever could have imagined, also in terms of the people that I've met there.
Thank you. I was about to say if there's a question, but you beat me to it.
You're talking about doing an MBA, but doing an MBA is pretty expensive. So do you think it's worth it, like the investment?
So certainly the cost of an MBA is challenging. I would say basically once you're still embedded at a university, the business schools and a lot of like the finance schools have actually courses that you can take even without taking a full MBA. So that's the first thing, I think, I think there can be a lot more collaborations between the business schools and the science departments in terms of preparing students about where they need to go. Because I think the skill sets is absolutely critically essential, regardless of where you end up, whether it's academia or whether it's a more like a startup environment, business environment. I think it's very useful. In terms of the choice of doing an MBA, it's certainly very expensive. In Canada, certainly a lot of the MBAs, you get a lot of funding and you get a lot of support to actually do the MBA. So it's actually not as bad as it even sounds. And you can actually pay down. The interesting thing is it was the only time I've ever paid for education, because I did get my master's in a sense for free through all of the lab work and the lab assistantships, and the same thing for the PhD work. The MBA was the only part of education I've ever paid for.
Amir, I'm going to maybe put you on the spot. This is a question that I think a lot of people who are leaving physics and thinking about finance maybe think a lot about. We all potentially have a lot of debt by the time we move out of physics. What sort of vague range of salary expectations?
Oh no.
Vaguely. you can be as vague as you'd like, but I know one of the attractions of moving into finance is that there's an understanding that salary expectations are higher, and I wonder if you could comment on that.
I can't. So I don't do traditional finance roles, you can comment on that side of things better than I can. But on the tech side of finance, where I work, the salaries are pretty competitive because, again, like banks are trying to be competing with people who leave Canada to join tech companies south of the border. Especially, for example, in Borealis, the salaries are like very competitive because they're trying to prevent people from going to Google. So you can guess how much they pay. That's more like deep learning research. On the data science side of things, vaguely speaking, probably I would say 70 something K, 75 K, let's say, up to 110 K are the salaries that I hear starting. But that could potentially ramp up very quickly if you are a valuable member of the teams you join, you know, like, because that's a decent starting point, but then there's a lot of room to get raises and promotions.
Thank you for speaking so frankly about that. Rene, do you have anything to add to that?
So it's about, I would say it's about the same on the risk management side in terms of just the starting salaries. Certainly like starting really higher than a postdoc salary and taking it up from there. And again, it can ramp up depending on which directions you chase. That said, I guess I would say about the monetary side, in the end, we all went into physics not because of getting a job or because of like making a lot of money. That was not really the reason why most of us went into physics. Like, the point was it was something that you can get passionate about. And so in the end, basically, I would only advise people, if you're in finance, you wanna go into it because that's something that you can be passionate about. Mm. And you wanna find an area that gets you interested, whether that is data science or whether that is For example, like some of the financial and like kind of some of the microeconomics and macroeconomics side, and understanding the financial system better, you want to get into something that gets you excited about. And that's, I think, probably the more important one. I think in the end, yes, in finance, in principle, the limit is there's no end, but then so is for startups if,
great,
if it works out.
I think that's fantastic advice. So, question?
The first question is related to money, which we have just discussed. The first one is, so what is the biggest challenge when you make a transition from something more ideological, like academia, science, to something more profiting, like profit-orienting, like banking and finances? What's the biggest challenge you have faced to make the transition?
I'm waiting for you.
I can try to take that.
As I said, I kind of had my reservations about moving into a corporate environment and working also for a corp and working basically contributing to a large company. That said, actually, you can define impact along various dimensions, and that's certainly within the company. But I did have the luck, for example, to actually help with international financial regulations over the last 8 years. And we actually have had enough impact that through the work that we did with actually some other physicists at RBC, where we gave feedback on financial regulations, where we had the impact that this was actually internationally adopted and will be implemented in 2-3 years from now on. So sometimes basically, and that might help in terms of stabilizing some of the financial systems and maybe getting rid of some of the issues that you've seen. So you can have an impact. The question is basically is you don't want to, and again, you're going into physics or you're going into a certain direction because you enjoy doing it. You don't want to lose your goal out of sight just because you're moving into a company or because you're working for a larger company. You still have your goals and what you want to do and what you're interested in, and you kind of pursue that.
I see. So you just keep what you originally thought and move on, pursue your dream. Something like this, right?
One thing that I add to that is that I don't quite agree with the black and white comparison here. It's not really true that working in academia is or ideological and great and everything is fun, because at the end of the day, you do a lot of work along the lines of satisfying your paper reviewers and satisfying granting agencies and things like that, you know? So it's not exactly that great. At the end of the day, you're trying to satisfy someone, you know, some stakeholders. And then in the banks or financial institutes or industry in general, the fact that it is true that these are places that are for profit, at the end of the day, they're trying to make money. But because of the fact that they have a lot of money, they can throw money at a lot of things that help humanity, like the fact that, for example, RBC has Borealis Institute. They're throwing a lot of money at deep learning research, and that's helping drive that sort of research forward. A lot of other companies, like big software companies, are throwing money at research, and they do have the money. It's just the rounding error of their budgets that they can throw at research with equals probably the money that universities are spending. They have a lot of money that they can spend on charitable things, you know. Right now, I have an intern that is working with me on some healthcare-related charity project. There are opportunities to do good things everywhere. You just have to look for them.
I see.
Yeah, I would echo actually that as well. Like even in terms of like even if your kind of really view is to kind of advance knowledge, advance research, certainly like for example, by being present like in the bank, for example, we're working right now also very closely with driving, for example, research with different institutes, working, for example, with MIT and working with Berkeley, for example, on data science questions, machine learning questions, working with the Fields Institute and MITx fellowships to bring, for example, students into a more kind of a more applied environment, but still doing research basically to kind of drive things forward. So there's still a lot of like interactions, even in terms of research that is still going on and that is also being funded through that. And by being in that environment, you can drive that forward and you can have that impact. And we started out in quantum computing. I would have probably never guessed that at some point in finance I would get into quantum computing questions again, but I've been starting actually working with a small startup company to talking about what kind of other type of problems that they could tackle in terms of quantum computing and bringing that back in. So it kind of comes full circle again at some point. I think it's all a personal.
I think that's been such a theme today is that everyone's had very strange journeys and they've all come together and kind of in the end in interesting ways.
Thank you. And I mentioned I have two questions. This is the first one and I have the second one. So the second one is more general. So what is the skills most physics students like us lack, but it's important in the jobs like in the banks and finances? What's kind of the skills?
I'll go first. So most of people that I talk to with science backgrounds, and physics one of them, are fantastic in terms of hard skills. They know programming, they know the right type of programming languages, they're comfortable doing problem solving, they're comfortable working on vague problem settings, which is something that you run into a lot in data science. The thing that most of people are lacking is soft skills in general, human interactions, communications. Somebody mentioned time management and prioritization. The concept of good enough is not a thing for most physicists because they get like very, very deep deep into problems. And in a business setting, that's not necessarily the best use of your time because you just have to understand what is good enough and move on and then with iterations improve it. So there are a lot of things like that, or networking, somebody else mentioned, is something that we are not necessarily great at, but that's a tool that, all of these are tools that you need to be successful in industry.
Yeah, I would kind of like the same thing. I would like a lot of the communication, like as I said, and Bridget mentioned it earlier also again, asking questions, basically reaching out to different teams, basically figuring out how they think, how that translates into you, how you can solve a problem together. It's actually surprising that given that we are coming from a research and academic background, we don't actually do that quite often enough to work. Like we do it in a certain topic, but we don't do it across different topics quite often and across completely different viewpoints. And so I think that the communication and the interaction, people have been doing best who have kind of picked that up very, very quickly. I would say that within the skill sets, like certainly because finance has been around so, like has been physics have been moving into finance for such a long time, there's certainly like a very wide range kind of basically even adapting. Like if you're somebody who basically just likes to, who likes programming, who likes coding, who likes the development and doesn't want to interact, there are still actually positions that kind of serve that. You can actually still kind of find that and basically solve problems. There's certainly kind of like, there's a career, that you can actually build a career from that as well. And there's certainly, in a sense, basically you kind of figure out who fits best into which role when they're starting, and it kind of evolves also over time. But there's certainly, physicists come in with a very, very broad skill set, and the most important one, being able to learn something very quickly. I think that's the most critical one, and that's the one that's used the most often. And then, depending on the rest of the skill sets, you kind of end up in different directions. If you're, again, moving in different directions, managing a team, then communication, time management is really challenging. The challenge that I felt was actually the hardest was when I took over a team of 10 people, just the number of decisions that are required every minute and every within an hour, the number of decisions that you make is incredible. Like coming to decisions very quickly without having the full information that we'd all like to have, that's really the tough part. But that's something that comes later. I think for a career stage, I think everybody in this room is actually ready to start and do something different.
Thank you.
Thanks for the question. I think we're getting close to needing to wrap this up. I'd like to close with a question that maybe, if some of what's been heard today is appealing to people in this room, what's step one of transitioning from physics into finance now? How would I get onto one of your teams?
Talk to people. First of all, most importantly, just talk to people. Like whatever you want to do, whether it's finance, whether it's a startup company, you met a lot of people today that are working in this area, a lot of people that have background, and it's always free to ask, and it's free to just chat and talk about questions. There's always positions that are coming up in all of the areas, and you can find something. And it's better than going through HR. Like that's the truth. Like the best thing is to make a connection. To people, get to people that you get along with and talk to them and make that connection.
For data science, it is broader than finance, really, for data science in any sector. I think one of the good things that you can do is to look me up and check out my website. I have a lot of articles and videos talking about steps that you have to take. Well, obviously, networking is very important. You have to figure out, in my opinion, like one of the most important things that you have to figure out is learning how data scientists talk and think, because a lot of the time you already know the concepts, you just don't know how to talk about them. So that's something that you have to learn. And then to get the job, like that's the same thing. Like don't waste your time applying online. Go find out. Somebody was asking me over lunch about the job ads. They have zero correlation with what you actually will do at your job in most cases. So find people who work at those companies, talk to them, see what they actually do. And a lot of the time, they are more than happy to refer you for the job, and you're very likely to get at least interviews, and then that's up to you to be prepared with information about the company and the team that you will be working on to ace the interview. Another thing that is very important is the distinction between companies and teams. There are companies like RBC, but they have many, many teams that, for example, are doing data science. You have to figure out what specific team you want to work with and research that team, because knowing about data science at RBC is not going to help you. You just have to know what that particular team that you're going to work with or you want to work with is doing, what they're looking for. And at the end of the day, what you really want to achieve is figure out why they are hiring, what problem they're trying to solve, and tell them how you can help them do that, and that's all they need to hear, because if they hear that, you're in.
Great. Take us home.
I think I just had one quick kind of follow-up question to Paulina's MBA thing was, you mentioned networking was kind of invaluable there as well. Do you think you can get enough of what you need from an MBA being self-taught and talking to other people and researching things online, or do you actually really need to go somewhere and get the actual formal education?
I don't think necessarily that you need to get the formal education. I think it helps. It kind of structures it in a bit better, like the MBA program, in a sense. And I was not part of the general MBA program. I did a morning MBA program. So the morning MBA programs kind of are structured already for people that are slightly more advanced in their career that don't want to take time off. So you don't have the kind of the cost of actually taking time off. You actually are working full time, so you're not losing really out on that potential earnings. So that's already like was much, much easier for me. As I said, what I enjoyed was mostly interacting with different people, basically thinking about something entirely different every morning and thinking about entirely different problems to solve that had nothing to do with what I was doing during the day. I think you can do it by yourselves, but I think the important part about this is, and this is about the MBA, it is the networking part and it is the interaction part. And in a sense, you want to get to that. And that's the part that if you're doing things by yourself, like for example, the thing that I don't advise doing generally is you can learn finance and you can study finance and everything by yourselves, but you're missing the interaction part. And I think what everybody in this room needs is not the studying and the knowledge part. That is something that everybody can pick up very quickly. I think it's the interactions.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Amir and Renee. That was great. Good stuff. Thanks. Yeah.